Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features Seth's conversation with U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois. Plus, she answers a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump doubled down today on his escalating war of words with North Korea. It's a tense situation, which might explain why Trump is now relying on his aides for the one thing he values most, stroking his fragile ego. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. As you recall, tensions with North Korea were simmering at a moderate heat until Trump decided to crank up the burner with this reckless comment on Tuesday.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
Even Trump is scared by what he's saying. Look at him. He's literally hugging himself. You know, maybe if someone else had hugged him 65 years ago, we wouldn't be here right now. But I, for one, I'm glad he's finally scaring himself as much as he's scaring the rest of us. Fire and fury like the world has never seen. Oh, why did the president just say that? Almost immediately after that comment, the adults around Trump tried to tamp down the rhetoric. First up, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
I think what the president was just reaffirming is the United States has the capability to fully defend itself from any attack and defend our allies, and we will do so. And so the American people should sleep well at night.
Sleep well tonight? We haven't been sleeping well since November. Tossing and turning has officially passed baseball as America's pastime. Other Trump aides even went a step further than Tillerson, essentially telling the rest of the world not to take Trump seriously. One aide told a reporter for Politico, fire and fury was not carefully vetted language from Trump. Don't read too much into it. Don't worry. Nobody has ever read into what this president says. He's not the Da Vinci Code. There are no secret clues. Haters and losers. What could he have possibly meant by that? So naturally, hearing that some of his aides and advisors might have been trying to tone things down, Trump went back in front of the cameras today and doubled down, insisting that his original fire and fury comment might actually not have been strong enough.
The people that were questioning that statement, was it too tough? Maybe it wasn't tough enough. So if anything, maybe that statement wasn't tough enough.
Not tough enough? What would be tougher than fire and fury? Fire and fury and bees? Too fire, too furious? What's crazy about all of this is that the original comments that Trump is now doubling down on were improvised on the spot during a briefing on the opioid crisis. In fact, the paper he seemed to be looking at wasn't even a scripted statement on North Korea. It was a fact sheet on that crisis. And you could tell Trump was familiar with the facts from the ingenious plan he came up with for stopping the opioid epidemic.
Talking to youth and telling them no good, really bad for you in every way. But if they don't start, it will never be a problem.
You know, if you don't want people to start taking drugs, stop making them think the end of the world is imminent. I will rain hellfire on my enemies until no man but me is left standing on the burning heap of what was once civilization. Also, say no to drugs, kids. They're bad. And while some of Trump's advisors may be trying to calm things down, the more unhinged members of his staff are only matching Trump's threats with even more outlandish statements, like assistant to the president, Sebastian Gorka, who said this on Fox News.
He's saying, don't test America and don't test Donald J. Trump. We are not just a superpower. We were a superpower. We are now a hyperpower.
A hyperpower? Well, why don't you throw your time machine into hyperpower and go back to when goatees were popular? Gorka went on to ratchet up the rhetoric even further by comparing the North Korea situation to previous nuclear confrontations and insisting that all Americans should support Trump, whether they agree with him or not.
These are the moments when we have to come together as a nation and support the executive. These are the trying times. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, we stood behind JFK. This is analogous to the Cuban Missile Crisis.
He's right. This is just like JFK's handling of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Who can forget JFK's stirring words that calmed the fears of a worried nation?
This government has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. And I just have one thing to say to the Soviets. Ask not what your ass can do for my foot. Ask what my foot can do for your ass.
But even members of Trump's own party are deeply skeptical of his reckless threats, partly because they don't fully understand what they even mean. Take Arizona Senator John McCain, who said he took exception to Trump's remarks. Asked specifically about the fire and fury comment, McCain said of Trump, I don't know what he's saying, and I've long ago given up trying to interpret what he says. Senators now treat the words of the president the way New Yorkers treat subway announcements. I think he said this train is now skipping every stop. I don't know, as long as it goes somewhere. So what is Trump saying? Well, it might be instructive to look at his past statements on the issue to understand his thinking. For example, a clip of Trump talking about North Korea's weapons program back in 1999 has resurfaced. And let's just say it does not inspire a lot of confidence.
You say that you, as president, would be willing to launch a preemptive strike against North Korea's nuclear capability.
First, I'd negotiate. I would negotiate like crazy.
And in fairness, he's keeping his promise. He's negotiating like a crazy person. He's negotiating with Kim Jong-un like he's Riggs from Lethal Weapon.
Do you really want to jump? Do you want to?
And Wilkerson isn't the only one criticizing Trump. There's also retired General Wesley Clark, who is similarly alarmed at Trump's handling of the situation.
You can't be engaging in schoolboy rhetoric with North Korea. This is absurd.
Well, of course he's going to. He's Donald Trump. He's the schoolboy in chief. He literally bragged about how great of a whiner he is.
I am the most fabulous whiner. I do whine because I want to win. I am a whiner, and I'm a whiner, and I keep whining and whining until I win.
That, of course, is from the famous Dr. Seuss book, Whining and Winning. I whine and I whine, and I whine till I win, and I'll whine once again till I double win-win. So with the president facing a growing credibility crisis and new challenges presenting themselves every day, it's perhaps no surprise that Trump's team is looking for a new communications director after the firing of former White House press secretary Sean Spicer. Spicer, for his part, seems to be enjoying his newfound freedom. On Saturday, he was spotted at Fenway Park enjoying a Boston Red Sox game. And just to make sure he felt at home, the Red Sox gave him a seat where Spicer was most comfortable. So who's in line to become Trump's next communication director? Well, according to reports, Trump is considering senior policy advisor Stephen Miller to fill the role. Stephen Miller? He doesn't look like a communications director. He looks like a funeral director. He looks like a haunted painting whose eyes follow you around the room. Whoa! And Miller definitely seems to be auditioning for the job because he went on Fox News this week to publicly stroke Trump's ego by lavishing praise on him with this outlandish comment.
President Trump's the most gifted politician of our time, and he's the best orator to hold that office in generations.
Ugh. Could Stephen Miller be any creepier? I bet he doesn't even call Trump Mr. President. He just calls him Master. He probably lives under the stairs with Eric.
Father! Thank you for bringing me a friend. Come, Stephen. Let me show you where I keep my rocks.
Whether it's Miller or someone else, whoever does get the communications job will apparently have some very demeaning tasks to complete. Tasks specifically designed to soothe Trump's fragile ego. For example, Vice News reported yesterday that twice a day since the beginning of the Trump administration, a special folder is prepared for the president. The first document is prepared around 9:30 a.m. and the follow-up around 4:30 p.m. The folders are filled with screenshots of positive cable news chyrons, admiring tweets, transcripts of fawning TV interviews, praise-filled news stories, and sometimes just pictures of Trump on TV looking powerful. Why go through the trouble printing stuff out when you could just hand him a Post-it note that says, "Your penis is fine"? Also, there are no pictures of Trump looking powerful. Whenever Trump makes a serious face, he looks like he's trying to remember if he closed the garage door.
It's closed.
So Trump's own aides are telling voters and world leaders to ignore him. And now Trump's closest confidants seem to be planning ahead for the possibility that he might not even run for re-election. It was reported last week that Vice President Mike Pence was positioning himself to run in 2020. And while Pence denied that report, new excerpts from former communication director Anthony Scaramucci's vulgar interview with The New Yorker seems to confirm it. Scaramucci was referring to Pence's decision to appoint a political operative named Nick Ayers as the new chief of staff. He told The New Yorker, "Why do you think Nick's there, bro? Are you stupid? Why is Nick there? Nick's there to protect the vice president because the vice president can't believe what the is going on." Oh, he can't? Mike Pence can't believe it? Did he not hear about the Access Hollywood tape or the Trump University fraud lawsuit or calling Mexicans rapists or the Russian entanglements? Mike Pence knows exactly what's going on. He agreed to play backup quarterback to a guy with two bad knees who only throws interceptions. Bull Mike Pence can't believe it. Sorry. Because I haven't slept since November. This has been a closer look.
Hey, I'm Amber Ruffin.
And I'm Jenny Hagel. Thank you so much for listening to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast.
But just one more thing. If you could, please subscribe and rate our podcast.
And review it.
And review it. And then call us and tell us you like us in person. Thank you so much.
Welcome back, everybody. Our guest was awarded the Purple Heart for her service in the Iraq War. She is currently a United States Senator representing Illinois. Please welcome to the show, Senator Tammy Duckworth, everyone. Thank you so much for being here, Senator.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
I really appreciate it. So you served in Iraq.
I did.
You were in the House of Representatives. Now you're a freshman senator.
I am.
These are all very stressful things that you've done. Yet yes. Is now the most stressful time that you have had doing any of your jobs?
Definitely. When I was elected to the House of Representatives, 6 months into my job as a congresswoman, I got put on blood pressure medication. 3 months into my job as a United States senator, they doubled it.
Okay, so that is just... So even being closer to it is obviously not more helpful as far as things like blood pressure go.
No,
yeah.
No.
So in 2004, you're serving in Iraq. Mm-hmm. You're in a helicopter. You're co-piloting. You get hit by an RPG. You lose both your legs. Mm-hmm. And yet you make a decision, it seems to me, that you sort of deal with it with humor as opposed to letting it sort of sink your spirit. Is that something that came to you naturally? Is that a decision you had to make or did it just happen?
Well, it was a combination of things. One, when I talked to my buddies who saved me, who carried me out of that field, I was bleeding. They said it was like the opening scenes from Saving Private Ryan. And they went through horrendous sacrifice to save me. And I just thought, boy, if I were to just go home and feel sorry for myself and do nothing, it would have dishonored every step, every breath, every moment that it felt like their hearts were bursting from the effort of saving me. So I just said, I'm going to look at this as a second chance at life. And then also there's a lot of gallows humor at Walter Reed when I was there.
So I visited Walter Reed once, and I was very taken with, because you don't know what to expect when you go to see wounded soldiers.
No.
And I was so taken with not only their spirit, but the sense of humor was thick at Walter Reed. And you guys made T-shirts when you were there.
We did. So some of them I can't describe on the air.
Because they're too dirty.
They're too dirty. Yeah. They're too dirty. They're not for mixed company. But there are some, for example, I have one that says, come on, I know you want to touch it. Or I do my own stunts.
Okay, yeah.
The one that a lot of the guys had, they took pictures of their x-rays of their severed limbs or whatever, and they put it on a T-shirt, and it just says, rub some dirt on it, walk it off. You'll be fine.
I went and I met someone, and he had a poster board that mm-hmm. people had signed. He said, will you sign it for me? And I saw President Obama's signature. And I said, oh, wow, President Obama's here. He said, yeah, but I'm more excited to meet you. And I said, oh, you're just saying that. He said, well, put it this way. You didn't send me to Afghanistan.
Exactly. Well, I actually refused to let Secretary Rumsfeld into my hospital room, but I became great friends with Al Franken.
So there you go. Yeah. And so that's when you first met Al Franken.
That's when I met him. He was doing USO tours.
So let's talk about North Korea, because you have this military background. When you hear the president use terms like fire and fury, I feel as though that's what he thinks someone with a strong military will would say. But as someone who was in the military, is that the kind of language that military people use?
No. The toughest fighters out there, the operators out there, are the quietest, most understated people you'll ever meet. And frankly, he's not helping us by engaging in this battle of terminology. I mean, you can't out-hyperbole a dictator who's crazy. A man who executed his own uncle with an anti-aircraft machine gun. Yeah. So Trump is not going to out-crazy Kim Jong-un. Stop it. You're the commander-in-chief of the greatest military in the face of the earth. Act like it.
Mm-hmm. And do you think... Obviously, he feels that presenting toughness is the same as toughness. Is that... Do you think it's a mistake to present toughness the way he is? Or is there an argument that that's a smart thing to do? When you do have the best military in the world, do you let people know?
Well, you have to understand that Kim Jong-un is trying to consolidate power. And one of the ways he's doing that is by executing anybody that doesn't please him. The other is to tell the North Korean people, you're starving, but it's because the world wants to attack us. So I have to take the money that instead of giving you rice, I'm going to use it to build a nuclear weapon. And when you've got the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, engaging in this, all you're doing is you're just writing the propaganda for Kim Jong-un. All of those tweets that Trump has been putting out in these statements, Kim Jong-un is going to put out through his own propaganda machine. He might as well be working for him. That doesn't help us.
I think, though, now Trump thinks... He probably sees, he's like, now my tweets are even in North Korea. This is huge for me.
Yeah, well, again, you remember this, you know, you're never going to beat a guy who fires people by killing them with anti-aircraft weapons.
Yeah. I also want to ask about this. You know, you obviously believe you have a background that leads to a diverse part of the military. It seems to me that diversity in the military is an important thing. Donald Trump said he was doing a favor to the military by his trans ban. What do you think of that? What do you think the president said to the people in the military with that choice?
He basically said that, one, even if you have served honorably, we don't want you anymore. And that means that if you are trans, then you're going to have two choices. Either quit and take your experience with you, or hide who you are and make yourself susceptible to blackmail. That's what happened under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a lot of folks were actually being held hostage by people who knew that they were gay and threatened them and threatened their careers. So that's not helpful. And on the other hand, we have had tens of thousands of trans servicemen and women who've served honorably, who've bled, who've died for this country. And to turn away people who are willing to sacrifice for us is foolish at best.
I agree with that. You obviously, you served your country, you sacrificed for your country via the military. But you always make it clear, it strikes me, that there are other ways to serve for young people. You don't necessarily have to do it via the military. Give us some other ideas of how you think people can serve this country.
Well, I've introduced legislation along with Seth Moulton and the great John Lewis that would allow people to earn, for example, college money for service. You should be able to pick up a chalk, a hammer, a ladle at a soup kitchen and earn college money just as much as I picked up a rifle and earn college money. We all have a chance to serve. Even if just once a year you go out and volunteer, you're doing something. Less than 0.5% of this nation wears the uniform. And that's an awful big load for a small percentage to carry. So let's all do a little caring. Doesn't mean you have to go join the military. Doesn't mean you got to go get blown up. God forbid, I tried not to get blown up, but didn't work too well. But but do something. Do something.
How much longer a break do you have? When do you have to go back to D.C.?
I'm going back tonight. So
you're going back to D.C.?
I'm going back tonight.
I thought you guys had a recess now, no?
Well, people call it a recess, but it's actually a district work period. I'm traveling the state. I was out in on a river barge on the Mississippi 48 hours ago, and now I'm here, and I'm going back home tomorrow.
So. Recess sounds so much better than district work period.
I thought I was getting a recess, but then they told me, here's your schedule. I'm like, wait, that's not right.
That's not recess. I thought we were playing dodgeball.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Continued luck in Washington. Senator Tammy Duckworth.
Hey, everybody. This is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois. Senator, before you were a senator, you were a member of the House of Representatives. How does your job change when you go from a much larger body to the Senate, which is, you know, a few members?
Right. Well, the idea was that it's supposed to be in the Senate a more deliberative body, one that has more relationships, more bipartisanship. But unfortunately, I haven't found it to be that way. Under President Trump, it has become a very divisive organization. And in fact, I've not been able to develop the kind of relationships I would love to have be able to develop, and we'll keep working on it. But unfortunately, a lot of the rules changes is making it seem a lot more like that very partisan, divisive House.
What are those rule changes?
Well, the taking away of the 60 vote threshold, where that, you know, to get 60 members to vote together requires a compromise. Then the doing things through the reconciliation process, where the Republicans have not even allowed Democrats in the room with a health care vote, for example, to write the legislation. And now it looks like they're not even going to allow Democrats to have input into tax reform, which is crazy because, you know, my middle-class families, my medium and small businesses folks are really need help with lowering their taxes. But it seems like this is, if it goes the way that it looks, it may just become tax cuts for the rich only, and that's going to hurt most Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you talk to your Republican colleagues? I mean, how do you have honest conversations with them? Do you press them on these things? I mean, how do you kind of have those conversations?
Well, I try, you know, and especially with President Trump, I've said, you know, to some of my Republican colleagues, like, you know, he's crazy. And they'll say, yes, he is. Do you agree with him? No. So when are you going to stop support? When are you going to stop being complicit in what he's doing and standing up? And you know what I said to Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski after that vote, that historic vote, when they voted against Trump care, and I said to them, I said, look, I've seen a lot of courage in my life, and you two have shown me a level of courage that is equal to any that I've ever seen with how they stood up for the people of their states and the people of this country under the onslaught that they were put under.
Yeah, it was an incredible moment. So you were running 2016 for your first term in the Senate. We all kind of thought Hillary Clinton would win. What was it like as someone who was elected, one of the few Democrats who was elected, to be elected in this era where Trump wins and there is this kind of Republican wave of wins?
Well, I think like everyone, I went through a mourning process.
Yeah.
When my race was called fairly early, and between the time I went up to deliver my victory speech, thinking that it was going to be the first of a great night of celebration, ending with Hillary. And when I came off of stage just 15, 20 minutes later, everything had turned. And we realized that, in fact, she was going to lose. And I spent the next weeks with literally strangers coming up to me and weeping on my shoulder. And then I realized that my job just became so much more important. Not that I wasn't going to have an important job as a senator before. It would have been fun, and we would have been able to do a lot of good things. But right now, it is such a critical job to protect things like health care for little babies and making sure that the elderly have, a secure retirement, and just standing up to just the awful things that are happening right now.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for your service, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.